You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to TFM's local watering hole for all things outside of Star Trek. And I am just one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single episode, pretty much every single episode, is the one, the only, Christy Morris. Christy, how are you doing today?
Glad to be back. And, you know, at this watering hole that is underneath a water fountain this time, since thankfully we have some background noise so that we can talk freely.
Absolutely. Yes. Thankfully, the recording equipment is also under the water fountain. So if you hear some water in the background, that's the reason why. And it's because, you know, we have to be very quiet. Otherwise, we are returning to a Quiet Place universe as we dive into the first day of the alien invasion. And before we do that, just want to thank everybody for listening. We so appreciate it, you supporting us. Of course, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. And if you would like to continue to support the show and help other people find it, go over to Apple Podcasts and give us a star rating and review. You can also give us a star rating on Spotify as well. That's very helpful. You can also follow us on the social medias. You can go over to X Twitter at the 602 Club. We're on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. You can find the entire network over on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. We're at the website at trek.fm online. And you can also support the network over at Patreon at patreon.com/trekfm. Become part of the team and make sure that everything we're trying to do here can keep happening, because we can't do it without listeners just like you. So, Christy, I am very interested in this first question that I have for you, which is the idea of, you know, doing a prequel to the first two movies that we got. I'm really wondering how you were feeling about that, especially since, you know, we did get a taste of day one with the family that we followed in a flashback in the second film. And so we did have an idea of like what that was like. And so, you know, hearing that they were going to be doing a sequel, but prequel, where the whole focus was just, you know, the original landing of these aliens, but in New York, how did you feel about that idea?
I'm always skeptical of a sequel. I think that you've got to have something that the story warrants and not just be up for a cash grab and then put out something mediocre. But I was interested because, as we know from the Cloverfield movies, they did a similar kind of thing and they were loosely connected, but each movie was a little bit different, but all about an alien invasion or, you know, by paradox, being actually out in space. So it can be done. And once I saw the preview for this, I was even more intrigued because I felt that it was something a little bit different, but still related to the original two movies. And a different way, a different perspective of the situation. So, as we know, the original family was more out in the country and had been dealing with the situation a lot longer. I think they were a little over 2 years in. I think I remember the first movie saying it was like day 477 or something. So it made sense to then tell it from a different time frame, show how it all started, and city instead of more country. And from a totally different person, showing how another family or another person might have dealt with the situation and what they went through. So there could be a million different perspectives of the same event.
Yeah. No, I think that part's 100% true. You know, in an event like this where you're thinking of, you know, the entire world dealing with this. You know, we know from the other two films that this happened throughout the entire world. So it wasn't like just the United States that got hit with this. So I think all of that is incredibly valid on that front. You know, I think it's interesting because I'm with you, like, when we're talking about, like, these sequels and or prequels to something, you know, I find myself to be incredibly skeptical as well. You know, I think, you know, Hollywood spends too much time with sequels and those kind of things for the most part. And, you know, I think, coming into this, knowing it's a prequel, and yet we had already seen kind of what Day One was like in that second film. I don't know. I did find myself to be very skeptical coming into this. But, you know, at the same time, I didn't know if they could really do a sequel to the first movie. I didn't know how that was going to work. And yet I thought it was great. I thought John Krasinski did an excellent job in finding a way to take that story and move it forward in a really interesting and impactful way for the characters. And then, of course, you know, seeing the way in which, you know, that first story led to us kind of figuring out how we would defeat these monsters in some way. And then, you know, the second movie kind of being about these people getting to a place of even more safety, hopefully, but also maybe being able to broadcast the ability to, you know, destroy these monsters worldwide. You know, I think all that was great. So, yeah, coming into the prequel, though, I wasn't sure what to expect, honestly. And like you said, too, this is all new characters. You know, we don't have the same characters, which I think at least that seemed like a good idea because, you know, we'd already seen what had happened to them in Day One. And so, yeah, I was really interested with this. And it was also interesting knowing, you know, John Krasinski wasn't going to direct this. And, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing, too, because in some ways, I think he had a lot to do with the success of the first two films, with what he was able to do in conjunction with, you know, having his wife be a star in those two films as well. And I don't know, all of that just works so well. So all to say, I didn't really know what was coming, but I think the thing that I really appreciated about this movie was that it really seemed to just dig into a couple of very interesting themes to me, and the human aspect the same way those first two films did, but with different characters. Mm-hmm. And I really loved this kind of idea of a new plan. You know, the character of Eric, played by Joseph Quinn, you know, he's talking to our other main character, Sam, played by Lupita Nyong'o. And he says, you know, like, this was not the plan. And it just really got me thinking about, I think all of us have been in a place where we feel like our plans have been changed, and not by us, you know, mm-hmm. in a major way. It could be job loss, illness, loss of a family member, you know, and how we respond to those trials or tragedies tend to be the things that really define us as people. And I kind of loved watching these two characters be facing these places in their lives where none of this was the plan for them, and how they respond to that is incredibly poignant, I think, just as a viewer.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought this up and brought it up first, because I think this is the biggest point through the whole movie, is that they're both in this situation, and that this thought is relevant to anyone, no matter if you're male or female, black or white, whatever religion, we can all say that humanity deals with this issue all the time of having some kind of plan that you've laid out for yourself and then something going awry.
Mm-hmm.
And with her, obviously, it's terminal illness. And with him, it's that he was in town from overseas going to law school.
Right.
And was going to make something of himself and wanted to make his parents proud, clearly gives off that vibe from what he said. Mm-hmm. And now they're both left on this cliff thinking, now what?
Yep.
Everything has changed. So I love most of all that that's just very relatable to anybody watching.
Mm-hmm.
But also then, where do you go from there? Mm-hmm. And learning how to cope with that. But also that gives you strength in realizing there's so much more you're capable of than you thought you were.
Yeah. I like the way that you said that. And it, what's interesting is the, I think the juxtaposition you get with the characters, right? You know, whereas you have Eric, who this wasn't part of the plan because he just came to the States to go to law school, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the plan. And not only that, but I mean, it's a plan that's kind of, it feels like it's been hoisted on him, right, by his parents. This is the kind of the expectation. And so none of this was really part of what he wanted. But at the same time, you know, big part of this is also Sam dealing with an illness that she has that's slowly killing her. I mean, she's in a hospice hospital, and it seems like she's lived longer than the doctor said that she was going to. Mm-hmm. But her response to her tragedy has been to shut down, to basically shut everybody else out of her life and life in general, right? She's stopped living. And I think I just really love this because there's just something so beautiful about this for us, because, you know, those are the kind of things that we all deal with and how we respond to things. You know, we either tend to shut down and shut out, we just become somebody who becomes depressed and can't deal that way. We become angry, you know, I mean, there's all of these different ways that we respond. And yet, human beings are in so many ways defined by the way that we push through adversity,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the choices then that we make when we're faced with these trials. And I really do love that about this film, and watching these two people then help one another find their way through,
mm-hmm.
And to find a new plan, to find that life is worth living even when you're in the worst of circumstances, you know, and that, you know, we can still help one another through these things, and we can be the better for it. Like these, they both come out better people by the end of this. And, you know, we'll talk about the very end later, but, you know, they come out better people for having gone through this situation because of, you know, just even the impact they're able to have on each other. It's, you know, finding a new plan when the plan has been, you know, irreparably destroyed is an incredibly poignant thing, I think, for us to be able to see, and it's just kind of I think coming across, I think watching this movie is one of those things where you find yourself really in some ways strangely uplifted by the end of the movie. You know, I think that's the thing you don't really, I think nobody expects to kind of come out of this being uplifted, you know?
Right.
And I think, It's awesome. I love that that's the case. So, well,
and one other piece I wanted to add to that is it also made me think of a quote from another movie, kind of cheesy, but a really warm sentiment. I don't know if you ever saw P.S. I Love You.
Yes, it's been a long time, but yes.
So when the mother says, even when we're all alone, we're together in that too.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has had those experiences. And so I love that it's like, even though these two are so completely different, they have that commonality of going through a terrible change of, you know,
that's a great point. Yeah.
Their lives now having to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And they could lean on each other in that grief of losing their former life.
I think that's a great point. And again, it's a part of something that really, and we're kind of talking around it, but this idea of just living life, right? You know, when we're faced with these type of things, we do have to decide what we want to do. And, you know, the beauty about this film too is seeing Sam learn that life is worth living again, you know, and that, and part of that is because what happens in this film, you know, Eric is this character who's out of place. He's not from New York. And he also seems to be somebody who kind of gets panic attacks. And so she finds somebody else who needs to be cared for. And it's by her not focusing on herself anymore that allows her to get outside of her own head and actually realize, oh, life isn't just about me and my situation. Life is the ability to be able to connect and help others. Like, and it's when we just get so focused on ourselves that it really kind of becomes that thing where it's all depressing and awful because, oh, woe is me and look what's happened. And that, you know, I think is just another incredible thing because it's like, yeah, if you're only focused on yourself, it's going to be very difficult to be able to find life being worth living because all you're going to be stuck is in the mire of wherever you are. Mm-hmm. But the moment you get outside of yourself and see the need of somebody else and then can start to meet that, it helps give you purpose. It gives you a feeling you can't even explain. And I think it's just incredibly beautiful. And so I love that, you know, this movie is really about learning to live life again.
Yeah. I mean, you hit the nail on the head so well with that. I think of that scene where they are going to Patsy's. When Eric finally learns why she cares so incredibly much about getting a slice of pizza, that it's because that's what she did with her dad, and that she yearns for that connection again to who she is, and misses her dad as well, that pizza is representative of all of that, and it's that specific pizza. And so he does anything he can to make this happen for her. And then while they're there, specifically, I'm thinking of he starts getting her to smile, pretending to do, you know, doing a magic trick, sharing some pizza and whiskey together, which, I mean, honestly, sounds kind of good. And it's just, like you said, living life again for a minute, forgetting all of the terrible things going on and having a moment of joy and fun and relating to one another and just shutting out all of the bad for a minute and realizing there were still good things left. And that we can't forget those. And I love that music as well plays such a role in that, and that you think about suddenly, what if it was a world where you couldn't play music out loud because it meant you could die?
Yeah.
You know, it just adds weight to that on a whole other level. But I think it was so great in showing the way that, like you said, she realizes she could care for someone else and that he realizes he wants to be needed. That he continues to follow her even when she tells him to go away, go find the lifeboat, here's where to go and everything. Don't help me. He won't leave.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because he has this sadness and feeling of being lost that you can tell he's latching on to the one person he connected with. And it's some kind of comfort for him.
Yeah.
And so then their friendship grows from there. And it's just, it's very sweet and very much about our whole, you know, consistent message of selflessness versus selfishness.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. You know, I think there's something in also kind of incredible in this thematic element that I was really struck by, because there's that moment where, you know, she tries to leave him, right? And mm-hmm. just go about her way without him, you know, trying to make her way to pizza. And, you know, he catches up with her. And what was fascinating in that moment, too, is he knows, you know, obviously she's sick. And he goes to, you know, try to help her from her sitting position. And she refutes his help, right? She refuses his help. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, in her pride of not wanting to allow him to help her, she almost gets them killed, right? Mm-hmm. Because the books all drop and it creates that epic chase scene that we get. And what I thought was great about this moment is that it reminds us that, you know, we need one another. It's okay to ask for help, and relying on others is okay. And many times it's not only okay, but it's necessary for our survival, for us to humble ourselves and be like, I need your help. And I thought that that was a really powerful moment in this movie, and it really stuck with me to see that, because after that moment, we do see them connect on a much deeper level, right? And we see them being willing to work to help one another, you know, where we get to that point where, you know, she's really suffering and he asks her, you know, what medication she needs. And he goes and risks his life to find the medication she needs at a pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's something really, really incredibly beautiful about that. And it's when we push people away that we actually, in doing so, are hurting ourselves just as much as we're hurting the other people, right?
Yeah.
And because it's okay for us to need one another.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love that she also finds a way to help him by helping him manage his panic attacks.
Yep.
Not only helping him to survive, but them both, because they're together most of the time. And showing him, you know, that there are still things to live for, even though she originally didn't believe that. You know, I think when she talks to him about her dad's music and her poetry, it really moves him and makes him want to stay around so much longer. So, yeah, I love that. I think that it's such a great point. And I also felt like it was a great way of showing that there are still good people out there capable of loving thy neighbor and selflessly helping someone in need, even though they have no idea who each other is before the day that they run into each other on the street.
Yeah. I think you just, you know, showed why the golden rule still means so much. Do unto others, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you would have them do to you. And these two people, they do that for one another, even though it's uncomfortable. And what does it get them in the end? But the benefit of survival, and life, and life lived, not just, you know, they're alive, but to the fullest, right? They have a much fuller life because they have shared it with one another,
mm-hmm.
and they have been willing to do so. And I think that's just incredibly beautiful.
Well, and even if you look at the way that this is about humanity as a whole, of the human condition, we've seen through examples in nature with animals as well as with people that mm-hmm. being in social groups actually is essential to survival.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that especially for humanity being intelligent beings, we seek out and crave companionship.
Yeah.
And that actually the more isolated we are, the less likely we are to survive.
Yeah.
So yeah. I love that message to this as well of needing other people, not only for safety, but also just for that social aspect of not completely breaking down because you're so alone.
I think the beauty of this film is that what it reminds us is that we are made for relationship. The human race is made to be in relationship with one another, right? You know, we're not meant to be alone. We are social beings. And so therefore, it is incredibly important. We can't live without it. You know, we see that time and time again is that, you know, people go crazy when they are alone for extended periods of time. And and because we need each other. And so I loved that you know, you brought that up because I think it's really important, which I think, you know, we've talked about just the thematic elements and what they do with the characters. But I think it's just important to kind of talk about the cast here. And really, we just have two main cast members that have any extended amount of screen time, which is incredible because then this movie is, I mean, if neither of them work for some reason, your movie's pretty sunk. And so how do you feel like both of them do?
Well, I'll tell you, obviously, I was hooked from the preview just seeing that Lupita Nyong'o was the main character. I've loved her in everything I've ever seen her in. So I was like, okay, you're starting off on a good foot right there. But then seeing that the co-star was Joseph Quinn, who we've all loved as Eddie from Stranger Things, I was even more excited because he's proven that he can be a great dramatic actor, but also add some comedic elements. And I think this was another great way to utilize his range and to really show so much more he could do. And I love that this stayed true to the same way that Krasinski wrote and directed his films before, of only following a couple of characters and really being a character story. It's not about the aliens as much as it is just how the people relate to all of that. And so I loved that, and I thought they were excellent choices for it. And then, of course, you know, we do kind of have a third character of Jaimin Hunsu as Henry, who is always great as well. So, I mean, I agree. If they weren't good, it would have been a bad movie. But they chose the right people that had some experience in this kind of role to really carry it. What about you?
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I think they are both incredibly likable. I think they do... they both do an incredible job in the film, and I think they help you to be able to feel all that you need to feel with these characters in a way that makes the movie jump off the screen. I love that, right? That's really one of the things about a good film is the way in which really well written, but then well acted and well directed characters just explode off the screen. And I think the cool thing here is that neither of them have to do anything insane, right? They don't have to go over the top. They just do what they need to do. So that you completely feel, I mean, the way that Lupita plays this Sam at the beginning of the film, where she's so reserved, she's so put offish, you know, she doesn't really want to talk to anybody. She's very reserved and slowly but surely kind of becomes a warmer version of herself is great. And then I think, you know, the same thing, with the Eric character, you know, he does such a good job of, you know, being somebody who is just feels incredibly fearful, and yet slowly kind of begins to find just himself and a little bit more bravery as we move on through the film. And I think they do a great job. Again, you know, this movie doesn't work if neither of them can find a way to carry the film.
Mm-hmm.
And they both do an incredible job, I think, of carrying this movie and bringing you along for the emotional journey that you want to be on with these characters, that you hope that you'll be on with these characters. But at the same time, they also, in that, they bring to life, and I think incredibly, the thematic elements by the way they play these characters. So it's really good. I love it. I think they do a fantastic job. So
one other person I completely forgot we needed to throw in as an honorable mention as well. Alex Wolff, who plays Ruben, the hospice nurse and friend, mm-hmm. sort
he was
of.
Good, yeah.
Yeah. I thought that they really show how much he does truly care for the patients and isn't just doing a job. And then that's why his death means so much more and really shakes Sam, mm-hmm. Because she does realize that he was not just clocking in and out.
Right.
That he's somebody that deeply cares for other people, and that's why he was in that job in the first place. And yep. when yep. he reunites with her, it is like she's seeing an old friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. No, I think you're absolutely right. And so now I do have a really interesting question for you.
Okay.
And that is about the nine lives of the cat.
That doesn't have a name.
look, I have no problem with, you know, there being, animals in films or whatever. I'm not personally an animal person. But you know, I get it, you know, like you were mentioning, animals can be incredibly important with, people, needing, you know, that in, you know, therapy, you know, you could mm-hmm. have these animals that really help people and all that. I think that's great. But yeah, I think, I was a little, this movie, this cat has so many lives. And I would say more than, I mean, he definitely has more than nine, because this cat should have died many times in this film. And this cat almost gets them killed many times in this movie. So there is a point where I was just like, really? Like, we're really doing this with the cat at this point? I think that's probably, and in all honesty, the cat is actually the reason that I couldn't give this movie more than 4 stars.
Hmm. Well, I will say I definitely questioned the cat's survival likelihood after the tunnel swimming scene.
Exactly. Thank you.
Because also the cat looked dry afterward, and I was like, the cat definitely went in with them.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying about there's so many times that in reality the cat probably wouldn't have made it. I do think it, well, I won't say I think, I know when the movie first started, I thought to myself, any pet would be a liability if mm-hmm. it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're just trying to get yourself out alive. It's so right. much harder if you're also trying to keep an animal alive.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's the terrible truth of the situation. And we see that all the time with mm-hmm. natural disasters. Right. But I also see the value in needing that companionship, especially until she met Eric, and doing anything she could to hang on to that. But yeah, I mean, thinking about realistically how it would work, a lot of times cats wear a bell on their collar so that the owner can hear them coming and going. So that would be a liability in this situation. The cat does almost get them killed in the scene where it's pushing on the door, later climbing up the metal brace that Eric has to climb up and go get the cat. And I was kind of surprised the cat didn't meow Usually cats make some noise. So yeah, I mean, I did have my doubts because of all of those things. But I understood why it was part of it and thought it was a nice addition where the previous two movies didn't really factor that in.
Yeah.
Because people have pets. I mean, now it's not going to work if your pet is like a goldfish or a snake. You're probably just going to leave it. But a cat or a dog, I don't know. It's a toss up. So, I mean, it didn't take off points for me because of those reasons. But I can see why it felt a little unrealistic.
Yeah, I mean, especially the part I think you mentioned too, where the cat goes to climb up and he's like going after the cat. And I was like, dude, nobody goes after the cat at that point. Like, I don't care how much you love a cat, and it's not even his cat. You know, I know he knows that she cares about the cat and everything, but I'm like, the cat's going to get you killed. And then, like you mentioned, the fact that it never meowed, like even when we saw earlier, the cat was kind of being a little, you know, not great. I just thought that part of the film, it didn't really make a lot of sense, especially again, you know, animals don't respond well to stress.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's no reason. It seems strange to me that this cat wasn't stressed at all. It seemed like, for the most part, it was the most demure cat I've ever seen. it just didn't make a lot of sense. Anyway, so.
But it was cute how it kept finding them again.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, too. This was really interesting because we learned that Jaimin Hansu's character actually has a name. His name is Henry. And he was in the second film. He's the man we see on the island where it has the radio tower that we meet. And so I wanted to ask you just about making that connection and then kind of in some ways connecting the fact that why these people were on that island, how they got to that island, and kind of telling us a story that we didn't necessarily know we were going to get it all. How did that end up working for you?
I really loved that because I think that you could go either way with this movie, where you could make it connect somehow to the others before, or you could leave them as separate things that happened in the same universe. So I loved that they added this and added that tie between them, because it does make everything else make so much more sense. And then also kind of warms your heart thinking he's now met these people and then will later help the other family that we've seen before. I also like that they show him going through struggles when he accidentally kills the guy who is screaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and you can tell the stricken look on his face that he didn't intend for that to happen, that he was trying to do everything possible to save that guy and all of them. And I think it was his son saw what happened, or at least a little boy. So now he's got to carry that guilt with him. And how do you move past that? So I think it does add a lot more depth to the story and inform then things that happen in the future.
Yeah, no, I think that I loved that, you know, the having them make the really hard choice of, you know, do I kill this guy or do we all get killed? And my, you know, for him, his kid gets killed, right? I think that was great. And I liked the fact that we got a connection that we didn't know we were going to get, you know, that we kind of like create this other reason coming into the film that it gives us this glimpse of this character and this place that they're going to be going, why they would be on an island and everything. And mm-hmm. I thought that was all great. So, having him back was really fantastic. And so, what's interesting too, like we mentioned earlier, you know, we get a new director, Michael Cernowski, and not John Krasinski. And so how did you feel like he ended up doing here? Because, you know, one of the things that we really loved, I think, about both of the other films, we thought that Krasinski had really brought it to life in a really beautiful way. He had done a great job as director. So how do you think he did as director?
Well, I liked here that Krasinski was still part of creating the screenplay with Sarnowski, so he wasn't completely out of the picture. But you can tell that Sarnowski does realize where this is coming from and needs to make sure that this is true in some ways to the themes represented in the previous two movies, that, like we said earlier, that it sticks to only a couple of key characters and doesn't get too grandiose with following lots of different people. And that although maybe feel a little bit sad that it's not the family that we've come to know again, that you're getting something interesting because it's from a different perspective.
Yeah.
And I like that it's this additional layer of, it's not just a different person, but it's not a family with kids, it's adults. And it's showing, you know, someone dealing with a terminal illness at a time when the world is now ending, and how do they deal with it? So I like that there was still a great way to tell the story, even though it wasn't what we were used to. And I think his direction was fantastic. I mean, aside from, you know, the couple of things we said about the cat, it makes sense. And everything has weight to it and doesn't feel out of place, or, you know, like they're not taking enough of a dramatic beat in the scenes where there's emotional moments. And actually, I will say the best scene of the whole movie to me was the way that they directed the scene in the church when Sam tells Eric about her dad. That actually made me cry. So, yeah, I had no notes with the writing or direction. I think it was a great new way of telling a similar story.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that he did a great job in direction. I think everything was spot on. It felt like it fit within the same universe, like you mentioned, just with the way in which he's, you know, focusing on the character moments and really pulling those out. I think even just the action all felt very similar. I there's nothing about what he did, I think, that I would discount or think, oh man, I really wish John had directed this, because I feel like it would have been no. Like, I think he did exactly what he needed to do to create a very good film in that. So, lastly, the question I kind of have for you is, you know, now we've had three films in this universe. Do you want more? Do you think we even need more? I'm at a loss as to where would we even go next?
It is an interesting question, because on the one hand, I could say, obviously, there are a million different ways you could tell the same story. So in that sense, you could make tons of future films around the same event at different times or from different people or different countries experiencing this. But also, I do feel like the way that we've had this start and end, it does form a nice natural package deal, and you don't need more. And I think sometimes we need to just stop there and say, this is great the way it is, and we don't need to dilute it by adding tons of other films in that universe.
Yeah, I like that. I couldn't agree more. And I honestly don't have anything to add to that. I think you said it perfectly, because you're right. We don't need more. And, you know, I've also eaten my words in that, in the sense that, you know, I felt the same thing about Stranger Things every time. And every time then they've kind of proven me wrong in some ways. But I would say the issue is that you always are just pushing yourself to a place where you're making it harder and harder on yourselves to reach the same type of level. And, you know, this does really feel like a very like you mentioned Cloverfield, I think, at the beginning, right? And Cloverfield mm-hmm. Paradox, I couldn't stand that movie. I thought it was terrible. And I just didn't think it should have, yeah, it shouldn't have been made because it didn't bring anything to the new to the story. It just, you know,
it was just weird.
It was a really, yeah. Whereas the second Cloverfield movie had taken an idea from the first film and made a completely different type of film. And I thought it was even a better film.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not like sequels can't be better than the original. I mean, it happens very infrequently, but it has happened. And so, yeah, I think if they're on the right track, you know, they don't do any more movies after this. But I guess we'll see. So, well, Chrissy, what would...
Sorry. The only other thing I was going to say, too, is I think the thing here that makes it different and special is that every time it only follows a couple of people, and especially that it started with a nuclear family, I think makes it more relatable and drew people into this story and made you care and invested in it. And so I think the more you get away from that, then the less relatable it's going to be. And even in this movie, I felt like the two of them end up kind of becoming like a brother and sister. So it feels relatable in that mm-hmm. sense.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it wouldn't work if you tried to do more and more films, is that you're getting sure. away from sure. that tight-knit yeah. group.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, and this would be the last thing I say on it, but I think one of the beauties of this is that it's not really about answering the questions of who these aliens are and why they're here and all that. Yeah, I mean... Mm-hmm. Again, like you said, this is about the human element. And I do think in many ways we've kind of explored what we can explore with this idea in the human element. And the rest just wouldn't be as interesting because we've already kind of done it. And mm-hmm. and they've done it really well. But there's not a reason, you know, for me to – or seem like there'd be a reason for there to be more. And so, we've really had mostly only good things to say for the most part about day one of A Quiet Place. So what are you going to rate the movie, Christy?
Well, I think it's pretty clear, but, you know, I'll just throw it in again. This is a perfect film in my book. I forgive the things with the cat because everything else was so riveting and both, you know, positive scenes and also terrifying scenes. I remember messaging you right after I left and saying, oh my gosh, I still feel like I'm trying to be quiet, like they could be listening right now. So if a film has that much of an effect on me, even after I leave the theater, it's a really good movie. And when I got home, I even told my husband, I was like, you know, he didn't go with me because he was skeptical as well. And I said, you need to go see it. It's not at all what you expect. I know it's a thing that everyone is probably skeptical about because it's different from the original family and it's in the city, not the country. But it is worth seeing. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I would give this 4 out of 5 alien eggs or whatever those were they were eating. So,
That was weird.
It was very weird. But no, I thought this was really good. My wife and I very much enjoyed it. We thought it was a great time at the movies. You know, this is the type of thing that I think you go to the movies for. You know, big spectacle, but also incredibly interesting human story, and that's what this gave us. And so I'm very happy. I'll be very happy to put this on my shelf, you know, and watch every once in a while with the other Quiet Place films. And so, yeah, well done to them and finding a way to make me like a movie that I wasn't sure I would like coming into because I didn't really know what to expect or how they would do it. So mm-hmm. good job on them. But Christy, if people wanted to, you know, catch up with you outside of the 602 Club, where would they find you?
Well, you can find me on Letterboxd, Instagram, and X at Bespin Bell, and on Facebook as well under my name, Christy Morris. And then, of course, I have a finished show that I did with my friends Amanda and Teresa called Sabers and Spells over on the Skywalking Through Neverland Network. And what about you?
Well, you could find me all over social media under the name Matt Rushing02. here on the network. You'll find me outside the 602 Club in a lot of different places. I've got the Orb, Warp 5, the Artificial Tango, Saddle Up, and sometimes I'm doing literary treks as well. And then you can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with a couple of shows. One is completed called Owl Post. Did that with Drea Kaufman, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then you'll find me on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week. But thank you so much for joining us.
And y'all come back now, you hear? Thank you.